Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of the Open Paddock Podcast. We'll call this a podcast supplement because it's not inside the helmet because we don't have a driver, but it's not a show because it's only me. But I have with me a very special person. I have with me Emily. Say hello, Emily.
Hi.
And this is the first time that we've ever had somebody other than a racing driver or you know, one of the Three Stooges on the show. So, and we're here to talk to you today because you have had a unique opportunity this summer. So would you care to tell everybody exactly what it is that you're doing in your in-between school years?
Well, I was an intern this summer, or month of May, for Brian Herta Autosport and Dan Weldon. So I got to work with the winning team at the 100th anniversary Indianapolis 500.
Oh, say that again. You worked with who?
Dan Weldon?
Yes, he did win himself a race, the 100th anniversary of the Indianapolis 500, and we've actually had you on today because, you know, you were a fan. I knew you last year, and the 2010 500 is when we first met.
Yes, we watched qualifying together up in turn one. Awesome seats.
They were awesome seats. It was the Three Stooges. You and your father was there as well, and we were there for bump day, watching all the madness happen as Paul Tracy was bumped from the field and Sebastian Saavedra wrecking all over the place. It was a good time. And, you know, so we kept in touch a bit over the off season as you were busy with school, work was happening for us. And, you know, it's just, you know, IndyCar fans become kind of unsocial and grumpy in the off season because all we want to do is see cars. So, but then this year you finally got the opportunity to work with a team, which puts you in a unique kind of situation here to maybe share with the fans listening exactly what it was like, you know, you yourself being a fan and then going on the other side, the dark side, as it were, and actually working with a team on such a, you know, huge race, because everybody always knows Indianapolis 500, month of May. You know, it's iconic. And, you know, this year especially was the 100th anniversary of the race, and you were able to actually be on a team, and not just any team, you were on the winning team. So starting with just the practice and just getting there, what was that like first off?
Well, let's just say the drive from Texas to Indianapolis was nice and long.
Of course.
I found out probably about 3 weeks before I had to be up here that I actually had the internship, and I was ecstatic. I've wanted to work in racing for years, and so any opportunity that I could get sounded like a blast. And but it's kind of, you have to switch yourself from the fan to actually working in it, which, I mean, wasn't really that hard. And luckily I was able, you know, Dan Weldon went out for practice, I went with him, and I'd carry all 12 of his helmets and drive him around the golf cart and try not to hit anyone.
We'll get to that.
But I mean, that was awesome that I was actually able, I wasn't stuck in the garage doing work all the time. I mean, there was a couple days I was at the shop and I'd rather be at the track and stuff like that, but I actually got to go out and I got to watch the cars go a lot and actually be there. And I don't know, I guess you get the access into the garage to kind of see what goes on behind the scenes, and the hours that everyone is at the track is just insane. Basically, from when the garage opens to when the garage closes is when we were there just about every day during the month of May.
So what exactly, okay, so you said that you drove Dan around, you carried his helmets. I'm sure you had some polish because he has probably the most immaculate teeth of any racing driver on the face of the planet. What exactly did you do, I mean, aside of all of that, I mean, what was your main purpose, I guess? I mean, just to learn or to take in, or were you responsible for certain things, or were you just kind of like a floater where that you just went where they told you?
It was kind of all of that. A lot of learning, a lot of just kind of taking it in. But then, I mean, occasionally I'd go run errands, go pick up parts from different places in town, go pick up decals, a lot of taking Dan to where he needed to be, getting hero cards put together for events that he had to be at. With William Rast as a sponsor, we had t-shirts. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we did some of the autograph signings, we would be passing out t-shirts. And as you may notice, drivers don't like signing t-shirts unless you, like, stretch them out.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be standing next to Dan at the autograph sessions, holding, stretching the t-shirts out or holding different things for him to sign them so it'd be easier. And so it would actually be, you know, his normal signature. Not that most driver's signatures are legible to say.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just a lot of that and driving around the golf cart. I mean, I'd probably go to the FedEx and the UPS trucks, like, 5 times a day looking for packages.
Hmm.
That was always an adventure because the packages never went to where they were supposed to be.
Oh,
so
nice.
I think I drove just about all of the speedway, like everywhere, whether in a car or on a golf cart, looking for packages and looking for random things and trying to get to different places. So that was kind of entertaining. One of those, you can't drive here unless you have some sort of credential and just kind of, I guess when you're on a golf cart, there's, let you go for the most part.
Yes, they do, or fear being killed. As we were talking before we started recording, we've now nicknamed that golf cart Emily's TIE Fighter, as she is brutal with it, much in the same evil way that Darth Vader was evil. So, and we'll have a story for that later. So you were looking for packages. You walked with Dan everywhere. You stretched shirts so that he could actually get a good autograph on the shirt. And we would also see you, at least when I first seen you this month, was Friday practice before qualifications, and we were down in the pits, and you were down there. It was me and Mr. Dalby, and we seen you down there, and you had the radio set on your head, and, you know, you looked all real, you know, official. What exactly was it that you were doing down there with the radios and all that? I mean, like, you were, I mean, because you were literally just standing there watching him go around the track with the headset on your head. I mean, is that just for you to kind of experience it, or were they actually?
I was just down there listening. It's more entertaining if you can hear what the crew guys are saying, what your spotters are saying to the driver. So I grabbed a radio and I just stood down there with my radio and listened to whatever was going on to see, like, what they were doing to the car and what adjustments, what changes that they were doing. Most of it, you know, it's kind of over my head still at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to figure out all that I really could.
And with that, you know, obviously we're subject to a lot of technical geek speak, if you will. A lot of just the way that, you know, the way that the car and the crew actually operate. Now, I mean, was when you actually sat down and you were listening to all this going on, whether it be in the garage, whether it be on your radio, I mean, was it like a whole new world kind of thing to you? Like, you knew that they talked before, but now you're actually sitting and listening and you're a part of it. And while you're not necessarily making the adjustments, you hear adjustments being made, spotters doing that stuff. I mean, was it kind of what you thought it was, or was it really a whole new world kind of thing?
It was kind of what I thought it was. It was actually really hard to understand people a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look around and just kind of be like, wow, did anyone actually understand what they just said? Just with all the noises and whenever he would get, like, on the backstretch. And yeah, it was, there was one point when we were doing a radio check with Dan and we told him to say something and he started singing on the radio.
What?
I have no idea what he was singing or what I forget, but I just remember Dan Weldon started singing on the radio for his radio check.
Oh, wow. Wow. This guy's a trip. Well, now, you were there. It's a one, Brian Herta, obviously last year we saw, you and I saw what happened to that car as it backed into the turn one wall, or actually it was the short chute wall, with Sebastian Saavedra at the helm, but they got in and started last place, you know, and ran the race. For you this year, I mean, knowing that, I guess, as a fan perspective, and then going to the team, and then seeing how, I mean, did you have any expectations, or did you know for a fact that, like, hey, we actually have a really good shot at this, or, you know, this is a complete 180 from what the team did last year? I mean, was the feeling, I guess, amongst the team and you?
I went into it knowing that we had a great driver and a driver that had won and could win at that track. I didn't really know exactly what the team could do. I imagined that if Dan Weldon was going to be driving with them, I imagine he had some sort of other offers that he believed in Brian Herta Autosport to actually have a competitive car. Mm-hmm. Now, how competitive they were going to be, I didn't know. I was hoping that they would be extremely competitive, but it was all a mystery to me.
Well, and as practice went along, Dan set good times, and then qualifying came about, and he set some really fast times. So, I mean, I guess, what was the feeling amongst the team after you guys? Was there much, like, I guess, was there any kind of, like, surprise with it, or were you not surprised? I mean, were people like, well, this is where we should be?
Brian Herta did walk up to me and say, Emily, it does not always go this smooth. It is not always this easy after qualifying.
Oh, nice.
So that was kind of his words. I mean, everyone was really excited.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had most of the crew doing a rain dance in between qualifying and the shootout. We were kind of like, Dan really wanted to get back in and re-qualify. And we kind of were like, you know what? We can go either way. So we kind of had a rain dance going, and it worked for a little bit, and then it just didn't work long enough.
Yeah. It worked for a few, and then, of course, we did the fast nine anyways.
Yes.
Afterwards, which...
Some extended time, I do believe.
Yes. A few minutes extended, yeah. But, again, you guys put together a great effort, and were able to... was it row two?
Yes, outside of row two.
Yes.
And it was... We were working our engineering with Sam Schmidt.
Yes.
So it was, I mean, it was still exciting for us because we did have a little connection to Tagliani and Townsend Bell, and to see all three of the Schmidt cars, Brian Herta's car included in that, up in the first two rows at the 100th anniversary Indy 500 was insane. And for it to not be your typical Penske Ganassi domination was just kind of, wow, did that really just happen?
Well, I think we were all asking ourselves the same thing because, you know, the Penske guys especially should have been, you know, all over it, and they weren't. And then Ganassi with their much-publicized troubles keeping fuel, which was a problem all month. But it was really exciting to see those teams do well, you know, the Sam Schmidt cars. And I can imagine, you know, from your perspective anyways, it's just like, wow, you know, we're in a pretty good spot here. We've got some, you know, quasi-teammates there, more towards the front as well. And so, I guess, what was it really like for you then in between qualifying and the race? Because there was obviously a bit of a lull in terms of on-track activity. But what kind of things were you doing and the team doing during those days off?
I guess during that time... Dan left, and he went to Tampa for his Monday media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I spent a day or two in the shop just kind of picking up random packages that we had been missing and just kind of hanging out there and getting things a little bit organized, since really we had been out of the shop for about 2 weeks. Just since there wasn't – we had the option really to work at the shop or at the garage, to be at either location. And so that was just kind of, there was still a lot of stuff going on, like a bunch of little things to do here and there, but that was probably the calmest point of the month, like that Monday, Tuesday. You actually kind of got a little bit of chill time. And it seems like when we were at Indy, it was either you're really, really busy or you're kind of sitting there twiddling your thumbs.
So hurry up and wait.
Yeah, you kind of go, you go from one extreme to the other. And it was a lot more of the really, really busy. But whenever you're sitting there and you're like, okay, I need to find something to do, and you're like trying to find something, and then bam, you're just going in 10 different directions at once.
Nice.
Oh, and I forgot. I did run to the airport, I think, probably 4 times within the month, 5 times.
Nice. So your skills and prowess does not just go in the golf cart. You are also a road raging interstate traveling warrior as well.
Yes, that I am.
Which is very scary to even think that I was on the same road. Well, okay, so there was a sitting and the twiddling, or it was really, really busy, a bit of a lull in the activity. Now, as being a part of a team now, they always say that as you approach race day, you begin to get butterflies, you know, the drivers, the crew, that work on the car. For you, in that time leading up to race day, how, you know, did you become anxious, nervous? I mean, how was that? I mean, did you ride those feelings with the team, or were you just kind of like, eh, you know?
I mean, not really, just because I'm not directly involved in, you know, what happened in the race. Like, I wasn't changing a tire and I wasn't driving the car. So, I mean, I was excited, definitely. And I was actually out on the grid for the start. Somehow I ended up being Weldon's umbrella girl.
Oh, nice.
And, but, I mean, I guess there was some kind of, like, running back and forth whenever we were out trying to get people where they needed to be and whatnot. And I ran back on race day to go get a shirt for someone. And I get a call, and they're trying to figure out which, like, radio earpieces Dan's supposed to be wearing, because he had two sets, and at one point, one of them wasn't working. And I was totally completely lost what they were talking about. I was just confused. And so I get back out there, and Dan has actually put on the wrong ones. And he's like, Emily, come here. He's like, which earpieces am I supposed to have on? And I was like, the 35s. And he's like, oh, no, I have the wrong ones on. So he's, like, in his helmet about to step into the car, and he has to, like, undo everything. And
nice.
Switch earpieces. But
the little things. The little things that matter.
Yeah, the little things.
And that's another thing, is just because you didn't drive the car, change the tire, the little things do matter at the end of the day. So you had, you know, you had just as much to do with that and making sure that everything was squared away. So don't sell yourself short. But
yeah, we say that I saved Dan from being able to hear during the race.
Exactly. See, and that's the most important part. So because, as we know, you know, the whole strategy thing would end up coming around full circle, and he needed to hear from the crew what exactly was going on. But now going into race day, Sunday morning, and Doug and I are doing a walkthrough in the garage, and I'm calling you out that you and Doug can attest to this. You nearly killed us.
Evidently, there's a video of it, but until I see it, I don't believe you.
There may be. I don't know. I'll have to get with Doug, and we'll have to comb through the video footage and look. But at that moment, the camera was rolling. Whether or not people could hear me was irrelevant. And you came screaming through in the TIE Fighter of Death, obviously in pursuit of something. But during the race, I guess, how was it for you, like, monitoring the race? Because normally you're, you know, from the fan standpoint, you're either – you've been in the stands for the 500 a bajillion times.
Right.
But, you know, now you're on the other side where everybody's watching, you know, your pit stall, where you're at, the cars going around on the track and everything. What was that like for you working with the team and actually being a worker as opposed to a fan? Was it any different, a lot different?
Well, I mean, I was actually in the pits for the race, and okay. If you're in the pits during the race, you really don't see a whole lot. You look at the monitors on the stand some, and, I mean, you watch them go by, and you watch the pit stops, but I guess you'd say I saw a lot less of the race, so I'll definitely be, like, rewatching it on TV a couple times to try and figure out what happened, but, I mean, it was a great experience just to, like, be down there and, like, our head PR girl, like, taking notes, what position we're in every whatever, and any changes that we're making to the cars, and all the radio and the TV personnel coming by, hey, did y'all change anything? Hey, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Like, everyone just kind of checking in, and so, and then, I don't know, it was then Dan's wife was in the pits with us, too, and she was sitting there, and we were right next to we were next to Dario's pit, and they had some sort of cover on this little stand next to us, and it had it kept flapping, and it kept, like, hitting Susie and Tammy, and so finally it fell, and we just, like, shoved it in the corner, and we're like, okay, they don't need this.
Excellent.
So that was pretty funny. You see, like, the little things going on in the pits, and then when the pit stops happen, you kind of jump out of the way, because you don't want to get caught up in anything, and all of a sudden, you're in big trouble.
So, all right, so explain to us, now we kind of sort of talked about this before we started recording, but you are kind of wind down maybe the last five laps, because, again, Dan had been running good all day, but then, you know, he ends up winning the race, and it's seamlessly out of nowhere, because everybody in the media center anyways, we were sitting there, and we were like, you know, we had no idea.
Right.
I mean, we weren't following him. Or really anybody. We were following everybody who was taking the lead, everybody who was running out of gas. And then obviously when JR took the lead, you know, everybody's eyes were fully engaged on what was happening there because, you know, obviously mega headline, you know, potentially being made here. And then the biff happens. You know, what was going through your guys' mind, if you can even remember or even unscramble, was going through your guys' minds about the last five laps?
Well, I mean, really, that goes back to pretty much lap 160, because lap 160 is when you're talking about pinning, your final pit stop. Like, you know, everyone has to do one more, and it's, do you follow the leader? I want to say Dario was leading at that time, or do you kind of do your own thing? And so we didn't come in with the leader because that was when Dario and JR both came in, actually. And we waited. I think we pitted around lap 176. And our fuel strategist, you know, he's like running back and forth after we pitted, making sure we have enough fuel. And he's freaking me out. And I'm like walking around pacing. What is going on? And then, you have all sorts of, out of the blue people in the lead that you wouldn't expect. I mean, at the 500, like, Danica was up there and Baguette was up there, and then JR takes the lead, and we know we have enough fuel, and we know there's a lot of people slowing down a lot on the track. And, I mean, I just remember it was probably, like, two laps ago, one of our spotters comes on, and he says, Dan, they're all slowing down. Stay full throttle. Don't lift. Just keep going. And, I mean, I guess they're just – we're doing what we can, and that's all we really can in a – I mean, we're all sitting there listening to the radio, and all of a sudden, he's in the wall, and then we all look at each other, and we're like, oh my God, we just won the Indianapolis 500, and we all start jumping like crazy, and at this point, I had to go back to the garage immediately, because our PR lady had told me to go get the team hats, and I wasn't leaving, because there was just too much going on, and I didn't want to jinx it.
Nice.
So it's funny. Someone actually told me they can see me. It looks like I'm throwing my headset. Well, that is an extremely annoying, heavy headset. And so I did not want to sprint back to the garage with it. So we jump a little bit, and then I chunk the headset and sprint back to the garage so I can get the hats to take them to Victory Circle. And it's just like, it was, just unreal. And I decided it was a better idea to run down the pits. So, you know, having to dodge a couple cars. I would say I almost got hit by Power, but I can't really remember.
He's a bit crazy. He likes to – he always is a threat to run somebody over, whether it be on his evil scooter or his car. So that's not surprising.
That was kind of my own choice, but, you know, I figure I'll pay enough attention. I can get there faster than going on the backside. There's probably too many people.
Oh, for sure. Now, so you celebrate. You're in pictures, you know, the pictures where you guys get to go down and stand on the yard of bricks, and they take your picture of the car, the crew, then you guys all get to kiss the bricks and all that kind of stuff. What was that like?
That was on Monday, and that was really cool. It was kind of – that was when I kind of got to the point of, did this really just happen? It just didn't seem real.
Waiting for somebody to say, Emily, wake up. It's time to go to class.
Exactly. Like, hey, pinch me. Like, what's going on right now?
So it was very surreal then, kind of when you're down there, you know, with the bricks and doing everything that the winning team and the winning crew does. And, you know, here you are, intern of the month all of a sudden. And, you know, you're getting to go down and have a once in a lifetime kind of experience in terms of winning the, you know, centennial race. You talked a lot about, you know, you and Dan talking throughout the month and communicating. How was that? I mean, have you guys become pretty decent friends? I mean, how is he? I guess you said that he sings into the radio, which is kind of nutty. I mean, explain the relationship that you were able to build with him since you were so instrumental in so many things for him.
Well, and Dan's like, he's very laid back, and I guess it doesn't take me long to figure out people, get along with people and whatnot. So yeah, like that, hopefully that's a relationship, you know, that we'll be friends for a while and, you know, he would give me crap about random stuff and I'd give him crap about random stuff. And it just kind of one of those, it was almost like by the end of the month, it was, have we really only known each other for 2 weeks? And I mean, that's how it was kind of with the whole team. Like everyone treats you like they've known you for a while and not like an outsider who doesn't belong.
Oh, nice. Well, that's good. It's good that it's a family. And I think that it's good that perhaps you started working with one of the smaller teams, or, you know, it's kind of one of the smaller teams on the grid.
Right, it is, definitely.
Because you're not going to have to worry about getting lost in the big machine that is, you know, Andretti or Penske or, you know, any of that stuff, because those guys are just mega machines. And you could probably feel a little alienated in a spot like that, but to be able to be with Brian Herta with one car and, you know, one driver, one goal kind of thing, and to be able to achieve it and everything's really special, and it's a close-knit kind of family atmosphere as opposed to a big corporate kind of machine feel that you probably have got in one of the bigger teams.
Definitely. And like when we're in the garage and we're working, I mean, our two owners, Brian Herta and Steve Newey, and then our PR person, Tammy, and me, like we were all in the same little cubicle, and that was where Dan had his driver's closet, and Dan would come in and out and get ready and come whenever he needed to talk to Brian. He would do it in there often. And engineering was in a different area since they were with Schmidt. Mm. So we would lose him over there quite a lot, and we would have to go on a search for him. That was one thing. He did seem to disappear. We'd be like, Dan's supposed to be here at this time, and then we couldn't find him. So we'd have to go to the coach or go to the Schmidt garages and just try and track him down.
Nice. Well, I think that's pretty much it. Are you still working with them?
I am. I'm going to be with them through the summer. I'm going to be helping out with their lights program. So going to a few more races, hopefully, just kind of see where it goes from there.
Excellent. Well, we do appreciate you explaining everything to us and kind of giving us the other side feel. And congratulations, obviously. Huge congratulations for
Thank you.
for winning the very, you know, going to your first race and winning the dang thing. And and by the way, it just so happens to be probably one of the biggest races of all time. So, you know.
Exactly.
It'll be awesome when you get back to school next fall. And everybody's like, what did you do? You won the Indy 500.
Yeah.
What about
you have
it?
To kind of, like, put it into layman's terms for most people in Texas. They're like, wait, what is it? Is it, like, NASCAR? No.
How dare you? Yes.
I had to explain it to one of my neighbors. I was talking to her, and she's like, how big is this? I go, basically, it's like winning the Super Bowl, but with race. And she goes, oh, are you serious?
It isn't, like, there are only, to be honest, I don't think there's any event on the level of the 500 in terms of all the
No, when you put in the tradition and everything like that, there's the amount of people that are there, the amount of people that watch across the world, really.
But, I mean, when you grow up as a racing, or, you know, when you grow up wanting to be a racing driver, there's typically three places where people will say they want to win. Four places, because you got Monte Carlo, where people want to win. You want to win at Daytona, however ridiculous that is. Then obviously Le Mans is the big boy over in Europe. And then you have the Indianapolis 500, which, you know, obviously is just, in my own personal humble opinion, by far and away, you know, the biggest and best of them all. So, and you've won.
And I did. I won my first time out.
I know. Look at that. I do want to say thank you so much for you know, recording this with us and giving us that other perspective, and we wish you the best of luck through the rest of the summer.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure I'll see you out at some other races.
Yes, and you will not run me over.
No promises, but I don't know that we'll have golf carts anymore, so good. You may be safe.
They need to take them away from you. You're dangerous.
Girls driving golf carts, never a good sign.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and we'll go ahead and say goodbye then.
Bye. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks.